is time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to another Viewpoint This Sunday. I'm your guest host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, filling in for the great Malcolm Out Loud. It's absolutely been my pleasure to be here with you the last couple of weeks, and this week we have a lot to cover. All right, we have a jam-packed show. We have top stories covering everything from the Middle East crisis to the impeachment, the war powers resolution to our economy, which keeps on rolling. In addition, we have a lot of things to look at. We're going to talk a little bit about the separation of powers and the constitutional crisis that's been building up because of this impeachment nonsense that's going on. You know, and in our last segment today, I think we really need to follow where that takes us. Have we lost our moral compass? In all of this, we find that hypocrisy no longer has any type of power over anyone. Nobody cares about being hypocritical. We see hypocrisy clearly every single day in what people say today, what they said 3 years ago. We see them lie. We see them change their opinions on the fly. Nobody holds them to account. And when you point out that they're being hypocritical, all they do is point a finger at you and say, well, you're hypocritical. It doesn't change anyone's opinion of the person who's saying it. Matter of fact, if it's your guy that's being hypocritical and it serves your moment, people are applauding. It wasn't that masterful. Wasn't that wonderful how he lied about that and made himself look good? So we're going to dig right into these top stories of the week to really get that going, because you know how fast that's moving. I mean, look at the week we had. It was kind of crazy. With me today is one of our favorite people. I know one of my favorite people is Jim McKay. Jim is a political analyst. He's a radio producer with a 30-year background in global technology and telecommunications. Jim, welcome aboard.
Good morning.
Glad to have you here. You know, what'd you think? Busy week?
Oh, crazy. Absolutely crazy. I mean, a 24-hour news cycle was working 26 hours a day.
Right. You turn on the news, you watch the news, you come back a half hour later, the world has changed. You know, it's really moving faster than ever. And that 24 cycle has really done a lot of things to our society. You know, back in the day, you got your news at 6 o'clock at night. Maybe you heard an update during the day on radio. And if something was really bad, you know, it broke into the afternoon soap operas to tell you something happened. Now, they have to manufacture news. So this is where I think a lot of the fake news comes from in our societies. They have to fill that time. You know what I mean?
Yes, totally. You know, ever since the crisis, and it all started really with the takeover of the embassy in Tehran in 1979, started with, what was it, Nightline? Every night they were giving you that, the hour-long update on what was going on.
Right. And then, you know, the first Gulf War. You know, True. We had reporters standing there and, you know, there goes a Tomahawk missile right over my head. And it is, I tell you, the news is addictive. Not for everybody, but I know the news is addictive for me. I am constantly, you know, listening to America Out Loud. I am constantly watching the news on various platforms because I want to stay informed. You know, it moves so quickly. It's absolutely amazing. So I think, Jim, where we'd like to get started is this whole Middle Eastern situation. You know, you could call it a mess. You could call it a danger. There's lots of, it's a situation is what it is. It starts with the attack on the American embassy in Iraq, led by General Soleimani, and then President Trump responds, I believe, absolutely appropriately to remove that terrorist from the scene, because we've talked about how powerful he is, how important he is, and he is the architect of so much terrorism around the globe, sponsored by Iran, that getting rid of him seems like common sense. I mean, here's a guy that, you know, he's not going to turn into a good guy. How many times do you get punched in the face, Jim, before you take action to protect yourself?
I think once is Donald Trump's position now. He's ready to respond to these violations of his red line is basically you kill American personnel, whether there are military or representatives anywhere in the world, and he's going to take action. He is tired of this excuse making. And if you look at this situation in the last week, we have American diplomats, media, the press, all of them making excuses for the people in the Iranian government. They have almost deified this general in our news, saying how spectacular of a leader this man was. He's responsible for thousands of American deaths. He was the quote-unquote inventor of the IED, which, I mean, you see a lot of people that came out of the war missing limbs, and he's responsible for these roadside bombs that blew up the Humvees and maimed so many of Americans and killed so many, not only Americans, but Iraqis and other representatives from other countries that were fighting in the Middle East. He deserved to be taken out. And anybody that seems to think otherwise is just so biased against President Trump. They don't see the reality of what this violent man has been doing. I don't care how brilliant of a strategist he is. He's a murderer.
It's absolutely
plain and simple.
And when did we lose a clear understanding of right and wrong, which I think is what we're going to talk about in the third segment here on Viewpoint this Sunday, is losing the moral compass. When did we lose our minds that because we don't like the president, because these people do not like President Trump, they will take the side of America's enemies and look at this man as though he was some national hero. He was a bloodthirsty, murdering terrorist. And to look at him any other way, I don't know how you can do it. Now, I see where the regime in Iran might see him as some great part of their overall plan, because, you know, he's that power behind the throne. He makes sure people fall in line, which is why they maintain their regime in Iran, and the people cannot rise up. They'll be murdered in the streets.
Yeah,
he killed 1,500 people.
He's responsible for thousands of Iranian deaths. I mean, when they had demonstrations in the last few months, they killed 1,500 of their own people in the streets. And this is the man who's responsible. He's the enforcer. Look at it like that. Call him. He's nothing but that. He is a murderous enforcer. And when I really get a little incensed when they were saying, and they had the presentation, the briefing this past week, where they said, well, we don't have enough information. We will know more of what bases, what embassies that he was planning to attack. Why was this urgent? Well, it's really kind of ironic that the intelligence agencies that all along were being defended by the Democrats against Trump's challenges for a long time to their information are now being challenged by the Democrats, where we don't see the connection between basically what they're calling an assassination of the general and the action that President Trump took. And they wanted to know more. They were calling this briefing the worst briefing they'd ever attended. And they wanted to have all the secrets. I mean, you could not trust a Democrat in Congress or the media with a recipe for cupcakes, yet they want to know the secrets of the government.
Right. Now,
in the most sensitive stuff. I mean, you start telling them out loud what the other targets were, and then they're going to switch their strategies and look someplace else. And it's a sad state of affairs.
It's absolutely true. I watched part of Trump's rally, and he addressed that question in the rally. He says, what am I supposed to do? Go to Nancy and ask permission before I utilize the powers of the presidency to protect America? But he's absolutely right, because they would have immediately leaked this out to the news that his next target. Rumors are the president, and those people would have been able to flee, hide, fortify themselves. Absolutely absurd. It's almost like a fifth column that the media has become against America. It's shocking to me. And when he calls them, you know, fake news, and there's this argument they're not fake news, the reality is they're not reporting the news. And we can go over that 1,000 a thousand times. They're not reporting news. They're reporting their biased opinion. They're backing up their opinions and their points of view with stories that are slanted. They leave things out of stories. Horrible is the way to describe it. But when we look at this removal of this general, then we see that the Iranians have to do something. So they fire these missiles at the U.S. bases. All of them seem to absolutely miss their target. Some blow up on the launch pad or shortly thereafter. So really, it's a face-saving thing. But we know that they're telling their people in Iran they killed the 80-something soldiers. And that's all nonsense. But I think the big thing out of that we saw the next move was the downing of a civilian aircraft. The Ukrainian Airlines B-37 was shot down, leaving Tehran airport. And of course, initially it comes out that, you know, it was mechanical failure or something. I don't know who believed that. I mean, the press certainly didn't really question it, did they?
No, the press were going right along with the Iranian story that it must have been an engine failure and the plane came down and broke apart on impact. Well, unfortunately for the Iranian media and the government, there were four videos of the missile going up with its hot tailpipe, hitting the airplane, blowing it apart, and the plane coming down in pieces.
Right. And that video is damning. See, in the digital world, you know, I wonder how come they can't get UFO pictures as clear as that. You know, it's always, you know, Clem and Bob pointing up at the sky, and it's always blurry and shaky. But here we actually saw a video of a rocket going up, hitting the plane, and then the plane dropping. So it's interesting that just in recent hours, the Iranians have now come out and said that their military did shoot it down by accident.
Yeah.
You know, I think the reason that they admitted it, my opinion, is it was, first of all, that film came out and it was completely obvious. And all they were doing was revealing themselves as complete liars, where even the skeptics and the people who were defending them, because it was, you know, it was a good hammer against Trump to defend the Iranian regime, even they couldn't come up with anything. Once you saw that missile hit the airplane, you know, who was it? Was Trump at the trigger? Did he fire that missile? They couldn't say that. So I think they had to come out and say, you know, the Iranians actually did it.
What's very ironic is so many people in the media and members of the liberal establishment are saying, well, if Trump hadn't taken out the general, then the Iranians wouldn't have fired missiles at us, and they wouldn't have accidentally shot down this civilian aircraft. So it's all Trump's fault.
Right. Jim, this is weak. This is what weakness, this is what weak leadership looks like. We've seen this, you know, from President Obama during his administration, basically appeasing the Iranians with money so that they wouldn't cause problems, buying them off, you know, going out of his way not to offend them. You know, let's not make the killers mad so that they'll kill us. Well, they already do that. You know, weakness in the face of the rest of the world is such a danger to us. And I mean every single person in this country, because it emboldens these people to now attack us through terrorist attacks, to attack our interests other place, because they know we're not really going to respond. But you said it in the very beginning today. You said that President Trump will take one punch in the face and then he'll respond. Isn't that the smarter way to be?
Totally. I mean, you know, they criticized President Trump for his actions, and Obama got away with his red line in the sand, his lead from behind activities, 570 some odd drone attacks on individuals, and took out thousands of civilian casualties with those attacks. And not the word boo was said about any of that. And now, if Trump does it, people always say, if Trump was to cure cancer tomorrow, they'd be critical of him and blame him for some side effect.
It's absolutely. Now, it's interesting that, you know, the Iranians stood down after that. Trump said he wasn't going to respond, which I think was the smart diplomatic move to say. But now they're saying they're not done yet. It's going to be interesting in the coming days and weeks. You know, obviously they control the militias who are going to toss rockets and this and that. And how much tolerance is there going to be? I think until an American is hurt, over there. And then there has to be some type of a painful response, not to just the place where the rockets came from or who tossed them, but to the Iranian regime itself. There's going to have to be some type of pain that they experience to realize this is not some nonsense line in the sand. You have to stop this, and it has to really cost them. I think the important thing here, though, is that we see this all leads to the weakening of the president through the impeachment thing that's going on. You know, this nonsense impeachment is weakening, at least they thought it would weaken him, but it hasn't weakened Trump at all. And Pelosi, I thought that was interesting this week when she really tried to, you know, hold back these impeachment charges so that she could control the debate and tell the Senate how it was going to go. What do you think of McConnell? I was actually surprised that he stood so strong. I thought he was going to swamp creature out and pretty much give in to them.
Well, it's his chance on center stage to stand up and do this. Now, most people don't realize that McConnell's been behind the push to get some 187 or more federal judges appointed to both the appellate courses and the district courses.
Right, all the district courts.
And which is amazing. Fortunately, they were saying that fortunately, when Obama left office, he left 142 openings that he never filled.
Right. And the courts, those courts are lifelong appointments, yeah. And they can certainly shape how our laws are interpreted, our constitutional protections are secured as we go forward. I mean, it's a never ending revolving courthouse of these cases that come up that could, you know, change what your rights are one day to what your rights are the next day. And you're right. I'm surprised Obama didn't fill those, but Trump is filling them. And McConnell's apparently doing the right thing there. Yes. Another guy that I see really, and I've had my own doubts about him, was this Lindsey Graham. He is really swinging the bat pretty hard for Trump, which, let me ask you this question. One of the things they say, you know, success has many fathers. Now, all of a sudden, you know, they were against Trump. They thought he was going to be impeached. The swamp was against him. Now they're seeing how strong this guy is. All of the good things that he's doing, all of their careers are kind of lining up for the future, not his next term, because they're still going to, you know, have problems with him. But he looks like he's easily going to be reelected at this point. And now they're setting themselves up. Did he change the paradigm of how the president should react? Are we going to go back to apologizing, or is the next president going to have to be strong the way Trump is? What do you think?
I definitely think we're going back to a strong presidency, especially on the international footing. There's too much going on around the world in terms of violence that we've ignored in many ways or taken a back door to. We walk away from it. We throw money at it. We think we're making friends around the world when we're really being taken advantage of. You know, what they always talk about, the quid pro quo. Well, what is international politics if it isn't quid pro quo? We try to influence and nation build all around the world, spending billions of dollars in foreign aid, and we expect them to align with us. And if you look at a vote in the United Nations, we're lucky if we get 10% of the nation's members aligning with the United States on issues.
It's, right. And that in itself is frustrating and absurd that we pay for all of that. You know, I guess it had... If you look back at the time that it was developed, you know, the League of Nations and the United Nations, it sounds like a good idea, you know, but the only reason it would work is that if everybody involved really believed in the principles of what they were there for and they really wanted to solve these problems. They don't. This is a place, it's another swamp all of its own now. It doesn't really solve any problems. When you have the Iranians and the North Koreans in charge of Human Rights Committee, you know, it's absurd. Now, I guess they figure, hey, put them in charge of that. Maybe they'll change. You don't change human nature like that. You know, Jim, I think we've covered at least some of the crazy top stories because they never, never end. But when we come back, we're going to be talking about the separation of powers and the constitutional crisis. And then later on, we'll talk about our moral compass. So thank you for being here with us today. We'll be back in a minute with Viewpoint this Sunday.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Welcome back, everybody, to Viewpoint This Sunday. A lot of very important things going on in our world. Some things we're going to talk about now are the separation of powers argument and the constitutional crisis that I see building between this impeachment, as I've called it on my show. I'm actually the host of Chasing Justice on America Out Loud at 3 o'clock every weekday. And on my show, I have called this an illegitimate impeachment. Not that the Congress doesn't have the power or the right to do this. They do. It's actually part of their duties. What makes it illegitimate is that there are no real actions taken by President Trump that would warrant an impeachment. And they're using it as a weapon, as a power weapon, which is what's pushing us into the current situation that I'm seeing. So where we're going. So I have brought on two fantastic minds here. To help us go through this conversation, we have Ava Armstrong. Ava is a political commentator, a radio personality, and an author who writes about America's heroes. She's a very strong voice for America, and I think it's important to hear what she has to say. Ava, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Excellent. And our other guest we have here is Del Wilber. Del is a former undercover employee of the Central Intelligence Agency, serving overseas in Eastern and Western Europe and the Middle East. He currently does consulting work in counterterrorism and writes columns, as well as appears as a guest on numerous programs. So, Del, welcome aboard.
Thank you. Good to be here.
So, you hear the setup that I had for this. My concern and what I think I've seen is especially the Democrat congressional reaction to any use of presidential power that Trump has is constantly causing trouble. We just saw the Congress come out and say that they're going to have a proclamation or a resolution that Trump has to ask them before he does basically anything using the military. And where do you see that going, Del?
Well, I mean, it's not going to go anywhere because the president has the authority from the Constitution to take whatever steps are necessary to protect and defend the country. Now, there are certain things that he has to do once he exercises that authority, but protecting the country is an executive branch function. Comes down to the president and what he and his senior advisors deem as is necessary to perform that, and so the Congress can go, you know, climb up a rope. As far as I'm concerned, they have no the resolution they just enacted has no real enforcement to it.
Right. It would seem to me that it would have the same kind of power if President Trump came out with a presidential proclamation that says Congress can no longer have any say about anything he does. He could do the proclamation, but it really wouldn't change the constitutional powers that each branch has at this
point. That's correct. And you know, the thing that the power that that Congress has is obviously the power of the purse strings. So they can impact any military action and that the president may order, you know, in the long term. They can cut funding or whatever. But as far as having a veto on what the president may order in the way of a national security decision, that Congress doesn't really have any power.
Right. So now, Ava, when you watch the news, and I know you're an avid viewer of the news and keeping up on things. When you see Nancy Pelosi come out and make these comments about the president using his power, and she wants to change the War Powers Act and make it more restrictive, and that President Trump has to come to her and the Congress to ask permission before he does anything, where does that sit with you?
Oh, well, it sits very badly with me, as you can imagine. Whenever I look at separation of powers, I always go back to the very beginning, to George Washington, a very first president. And there's a reason why the founding fathers made the separation of powers as they are. It's so that tyranny cannot rule. And right now, the House of Representatives represent tyranny. And I know that sounds rather probably odd to most people, but the actions they're taking are tyrannical, and they're against our government. They're actually against America. George Washington had the ultimate power to decide if they're going into battle, or if he wanted to start a battle, or if he wanted to end a battle. So this is a presidential authority that is so sacrosanct, okay? It is the ultimate authority, actually, because it's the survival of our country that depends upon it. So Nancy Pelosi, I think, should have some kind of schooling about the original documents and how this country was started. And she should understand that that power remains with the commander-in-chief. Congress only has the power to legislate and to dole out money. That's it.
Right. Now, I think, and again, we can end up beating up the press constantly in these conversations, but when you say she should be schooled in the Constitution, most Americans need to be schooled in the Constitution because it's not taught anymore. What's taught to these young people, especially in our educational institutions, is that the Constitution is a living, breathing document that has to change with modern whims and what we see as right and wrong now. And if you don't agree with something, you really don't have to follow it. That's an out-of-date, out-of-step document created by people from 300 years ago. They don't understand our world. So I think and I don't know how we get back to that, to teaching this, because we don't run the schools. We don't have control there. But I think the reason that the president has this initial power, as Dell, as you have said, the president has absolute right to take action when he sees it. If you think about the size and the scope of what the Congress is, 500 and something members, all with different opinions, different ideas, different backbones, and ability to understand situations. If you had to go to that group every time there was some type of crisis that required a fast, powerful response by our military, it would be so unwieldy, we would lose in almost every conflict. You have to have an ability, and that's why this was written in here into the Constitution, for the president. He was elected by the people. They trust him to make a decision to protect us. And he sees something going on, he has to take action immediately. It can't be a decision by committee. Someone has to make a decision. And of course, he's responsible for that decision. Now, as we go along, once you're down the road a little bit and the president takes some action, say he did go after Iran a little more than, you know, a response to the missile attack. Say he started to continually bombing campaign for days and days and days. At that point, as a citizen, I can see possibly the need for, okay, let's if it's the initial crisis is over and we've hammered them and they're not attacking us all over the place, maybe now we do need to take a little bit of a break and decide how do we go forward, all of us, so we're represented. Del, where do you see that? Is there any logic in that, what I'm saying?
Well, no, I mean, what you just said makes sense. I mean, certainly, we have to be concerned that we don't involve ourselves in some misguided effort. The War Powers Act, came about after the Vietnam War, if I remember correctly, and it was a result of that, to try to prevent, a future president from engaging us in a undeclared war, for and an extended period of time, like Vietnam was for years, and so there's some sense in doing that in order to protect, you know, that we don't, you know, don't, or that our commander-in-chief always makes wise decisions. But for the Congress and that to deem upon themselves the right to overrule or to take the decision-making process out of the hands of the executive branch, it's an overstepping of their constitutional authority.
Absolutely. So, Ava, you and I were talking the other day about this, off air, and we were coming across the idea that they see Trump as overstepping his powers, where what Dell just said is that the Congress is overstepping its powers. Do you see any of the actions that President Trump is taking as an overstep, that, hey, is there anything to what they're saying that they should be able to slow him down? Or do you see he's done everything appropriately? They just don't like it.
I feel the latter way. He's done everything exactly appropriately. And whenever I have these questions, I always go back to the beginning. I go right back to General Washington, George Washington, President Washington. What would he do? And back in those days, you have to understand, there wasn't the rapid speed of war as we have now, okay? There was, some mounted people that were coming in, you know, on horses, or there was a boat in the harbor that was, you know, firing upon somebody. So it was a slower pace of life back in 1776, okay? But nowadays, you need a commander-in-chief who has the ability to say, yes, strike that right now, because that's an enemy and that guy just attacked us. And, you know, we have such a rapid moving scenario here. We have to have a commander-in-chief who has incredible flexibility. And if we don't have that, if we keep holding down the president, if the next president in office is restrained and constrained and chained down like President Trump is, we will fail, because our enemies are watching this and they're enjoying every minute of it.
And that goes to, I think, to my overall view of this, is that, first of all, they're not used to a strong president doing the right thing. They're used to people in office, these swamp creatures that are in office, that take their time. How many hits have we taken over the last bunch of years that we didn't respond to appropriately? And weakness. And Dell, I'm going to ask you, as a former CIA guy out in the field, you know, the rest of the world is not the United States. The rest of the world does not view weakness as an asset or as a really good thing. Weakness is exploited in people. Am I right on that?
Oh, absolutely. You know, our enemies are constantly on the lookout for opportunities that they can advance their own agenda at the expense of ours. And you know, when the Obama presidency, there towards the end, if you recall, one of our small naval vessels supposedly crossed over into Iranian waters, and we saw the result of that with American sailors on their knees with their hands behind their heads, and the most disgusting part of that was, after their release was finally obtained, then Secretary of State John Kerry thanked the Iranians for their help in this situation. I mean, that was absolutely disgusting. Our enemies, you know, the Russians, the Chinese, were certainly observing what was taking place in that, and they were laughing at the Obama administration for the weakness that they projected. Our allies were just absolutely baffled by how any American administration could stand by and allow something to happen and then thank, you know, the Iranians for what they did. It's, you know, it's mind-boggling to me that we survived 8 years under Obama.
Yep. And I tell you, I have to, you know, you try and look at your own life experience to try and understand some things. And I'm not an undercover in the CIA. I haven't been out in that world, but I was a police commander. And I have had to send my men and women into very, very dangerous situations where they're in a pursuit with someone who has just robbed a bank with a weapon and shots fired. And now I have an officer alone on the highway, many miles away, right behind this vehicle. And they're saying, do I continue the pursuit? Now, I know at that moment making that call, I can't call back to headquarters and say, hey, can you get the chief on the phone? Ask the mayor what you think you should do. Let's have a committee. I have to be able to have that power, which goes to what Ava is saying, that the commander in chief has to have that power to act. So I tell this officer, yes, proceed. In that decision, I know I could be sending that officer to their death, because it's part of what they're supposed to do. When we see those military personnel were taken by the Iranians, Del, I remember how infuriated I was to see them on their hands and knees with their hands behind their head. And I looked at that and I said, okay, my own experience tells me, as the president, I can imagine, and if you're a weaker president, I think Obama was a weaker president that way. His idea was, if he did anything at that point, would they execute those soldiers right on TV? Would those military personnel been shot right there and dumped into the Gulf? And then what would that have done to us? So I kind of get that indecision, trying to make a decision about it. But at the same time, when we allow that to stand, our enemies do look at that as weakness and say, you know what? They sat right there and took it. So I'm going to ask President Ava Armstrong. President Armstrong, the Iranians have just captured a patrol boat with United States soldiers on it. They got them on their hands and knees pointing guns at them. What are you going to do about this right now?
Well, I would certainly not consult with Congress, that's for sure. I would be putting, you know, the best and the brightest out there to, you know, if there was a negotiation to be made, you know, to get them back safe and sound would be, of course, the first objective. And that's what I would do. I mean, I wouldn't ask Congress about it. And that's it's a presidential privilege. That's what he has to do. And it's also the most frightening decision-making at times too. Right. But if you have the right person in charge, and I think we do with President Trump, he's a God-fearing man. And he knows that he can make the situation worse, or with certain activities, he can make the situation better. So I feel complete confidence in him.
I do too. I think he has now shown us, you know, before he was an unknown entity, you know, we believed that he was going to come in and do some of the things he said. At least we all hoped, you know, he wasn't a swamp creature. We hoped he was going to do the right thing. But now he's demonstrated very clearly through the course of this administration, he's not afraid to take action. He's not afraid to do the wrong thing. But my follow-up to that question for President Armstrong is, after you got them back safely, would you have sent them a pallet full of money to say thank you? Or what would President Armstrong have done at that point once we got them back safely?
I'll be totally honest with you. I think President Trump has been extremely restrained in all of the kinds of military little skirmishes we've had thus far. And I don't think I could have had the extreme patience that he's exhibited. This last incident, you know, Soleimani taking him out, I applaud that, just like I applauded when bin Laden was taken out. I mean, I don't think these things are bad to do. These are helpful. You know, right. We need to do these things.
At some point, you know, people have to understand that you're not a paper tiger, that there is consequences to their actions. Trump has said it nicely, just exactly as President Joe would say. Listen, don't hurt our people, don't mess with our interests, and we'll all get along just fine. Do anything to our interests, and there's going to be a price to be paid. Now, obviously, you have to consult with your military personnel. You can't just go off, you know, firing weapons at people. That's an inappropriate response. But an appropriate punch in the face back sometimes it can be very, very helpful. So, Del, let me ask you something. As someone out there in the field doing stuff, when you see weakness like we saw with Obama, I can only imagine that hurts the troops out in the field. I know watching those sailors on that boat out there on their hands and knees, and then nothing happened after that. There was no smackback for how dare they do that to an American patrol boat with our American military personnel. How does that relate to the people in the field when you're out trying to do your job and there's nobody seemingly backing you up? You're kind of on your own. What's that feel like out there?
You know, I'll tell you a real quick little story from my own experience. When I was with the agency, I was back in Frankfurt, Germany at the time, and I worked with this was back during the Iranian hostage situation crisis that was going on. And I worked with a gentleman named Ken Haas, who headed up a task force and that was focused on Iran. Ken was a great guy, fantastic guy to work for and work with. Most of you probably don't know, but I've always been an amateur cartoonist ever since I was a little kid. I draw pictures and usually did it, you know, related to work where I could lighten the atmosphere a little bit, get us to laugh at ourselves a little, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Well, I had drawn a poster-sized caricature of the Ayatollah Khomeini with this big studly bald eagle swooping over his head and dropping a load of bird crap right on top of his his head. Well, Ken loved that. I mean, he just thought it was the funniest thing he ever saw. And he got reassigned to be the chief of station at in Beirut. And Ken asked me if he could take that with him. He wanted to have it framed. I said, yeah, sure, take it with you. Well, I gave it to him. And you know, Ken left and went on his way. Well, April 18th of 1983, an Iranian-backed terrorist drove a truck right into the front door of our United States Embassy in Beirut and blew it up. And Ken was killed along with most of the agency staff in Beirut, and a total of 17 Americans. And my poster was probably hanging on his wall when that happened. Well, I have to tell you, fast forwarding to the other day, after Soleimani was taken out, I sat on my front porch, and it was a nice day here, and I fired up a cigar and grabbed myself a glass of scotch, and I just sat there and looked at the flagpole with the U.S. flag waving in my front yard. And I mean, I felt, you know what, there's been a little justice here finally. After all of these years, there's been a little justice. So, you know, I lived through years of indecision on the part of some presidents, like Jimmy Carter. There was a brief period under Ronald Reagan where we felt that, you know, the United States was back. And then, you know, we kind of went back and forth in that for decades afterwards. But when Soleimani was taken out, I just felt satisfaction as I haven't felt in many, many years.
And I think, and deservedly so for everyone, this is a man who killed Americans, and we were standing up. See, it feels good to stand up for yourself, to say that's enough. You know, as we talk about this separation of powers, and we're talking about the constitutional crisis that's being brought on by people who are not, in my opinion, acting in America's best interest. They're acting in their own political interest so that they can push themselves forward, regain power, whatever it is. We see all of these things are connected. Strength really is what changes the dynamic. Trump is very, very strong, and therefore the enemies of Trump are failing because he's doing the right thing with strength. So the separation of powers is important to our nation. It's important to our functioning of government. So it's a checks and balances. If we don't have that separation of powers, we're going to have a tyrannical leader, or we're going to have a Congress that's out of control, or a judiciary that writes its own laws constantly. Not that they don't do that enough already, but it could totally get out of control. So this constitutional crisis that could be coming, we have to keep our eyes open for it. We have to pay attention. We have to choose sides and make our voices heard. So I want to thank Dell, and I want to thank Ava for being part of this conversation here. And we will we'll be back with our third section. In the second minute, we're going to talk about, you know, have we lost our moral compass?
We are the vision of the voices. You can email us at talk@americaoutloud.com.
Spreading the out loud truth from sea to shining sea. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. We are the vision of the voices. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Viewpoint This Sunday. I'm your guest host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, And with me is Del Wilber, former CIA operative. And we also have Ava Armstrong, all around great person who knows everything about America. So we're going to continue right into this third segment, which I think is important because it's kind of the development from the first two segments of what we're talking about. And it really involves everything that's going on in our country today. It all comes down to who we are as a people. In the beginning of our show today, I talked about hypocrisy and the lack of value hypocrisy has anymore in our society. There was a time when you were called a hypocrite and it was pointed out that you were indeed being hypocritical in some area of your life. It would be detrimental to your career, to your reputation, to everything about you. It would be terrible. It could remove you from whatever you were involved in because you were a bad person. Similarly, acting in bad ways, bad personal activities, things that were considered immoral, inappropriate. You know, Bill Clinton's activity with an intern in the White House would have been devastating just years earlier. And we don't have that. So is it a continual drop in our moral compass? So that's kind of, I think, where we're looking at here. Our loss of a moral compass, the cause and effects to our country, is that what's causing the Congress to be able to run this illegitimate impeachment of a president who has done absolutely nothing wrong, but they're going to use the power of their office, the rest of us be damned, no matter what the evidence shows, to try and throw this man out of office because they don't like him. And that's not only acceptable to about half of the people in our country, they're applauding it. When we watched Adam Schiff come out and hold his hearings in the Congress, and it was all one-sided, there was not two sides. There was no people bringing in their own witnesses to counteract. It was a one-sided attack to get to the point that they could have something to impeach the president for, and then to turn around and see now that they have their articles of impeachment, Pelosi will not take them over to the Senate like she's supposed to. She's playing another game with that, and everybody seems to be okay with that on that side. They seem to think, what a smart, brilliant move that is. Although we're starting to see the pendulum switch there. Even her own party starting to think that's not such a good idea. But the fact that she can do it with impunity is amazing. When we see our press, instead of acting like a part of America to hold truth to power, no matter who's in power, and to give us information as Americans that we really need, we see them acting like a fifth column and an arm of the Democratic Party. That anything that the Democratic Party wants to do, no matter how radical it gets, no matter how anti-American it is, no matter how anti-traditional value it is, that's what's good, and that's where the stories are presented from. And the other side is always evil, bad, hates everyone, wants to destroy the country. Absolutely amazing. So when we talk about loss of our moral compass, the cause and effects is something I think we need to look at very closely, because once you go down this road, once you let this genie out of the bottle, how do you go back to being a good and decent people? Now, as a caveat, I know there are millions and millions and millions of people out there that believe, like I do, that are faith-based people, that are good and decent people. But we don't run the media. We don't run the college educational system. We don't run the power levers of the world. We're kind of on here taking a beating and trying to survive. So, Ava, you keep a pretty good pulse on everything that's going on. Where do you see our moral compass now, and how did we get here?
Well, I think when way back when we had separation of church and state, I don't think that was intended to be separation. I think it should have been. There's no religion that the state endorses. However, we are supposed to have religious freedom in this country. And statistics are very alarming on this discussion here, because about 33% of America has no religious affiliation. So they're either agnostic, atheist, or just answered no religious affiliation. And the other thing that alarms me is Wicca is the fastest growing religion and it's actually paganism, okay? So that's the fastest growing religion right now in America, that and the Muslim religion. This is alarming on many levels. For one thing, all of our laws in this country are based on Judeo-Christian principles, okay? Our whole country was formed in that manner. All of our founding documents refer to God. The Ten Commandments, I mean, if you run this country just on the Ten Commandments alone, it would be a better country. We're losing this faith, though. We're losing our youth are turning to other things, New Age religion. I think a connection with God is really the bedrock of this society.
As we see that change, we see the attack on religion. It seems to be a never-ending attack on religion. We see the rise of fanatical religions around the world, which, you know, I guess younger people that don't have that underpinning. I know I went to church as a kid. My parents had a faith. It wasn't a crazy faith, every week kind of a faith, but we went to church kind of regularly. My wife and I made a decision that we thought that underpinning was important for our children. So we go every week. Now, we're not holy rollers. We're not out in the street, but we do have a strong faith that we rely on. We try to live our lives in a moral kind of a way. We always try to do the right thing, even though we fight with it. You know, we're normal people trying to do the right thing. But we see how many of my children's friends, families, have no moral underpinning. So you say 33%. I was going to say to myself, wow, that seems really high based on what you see out in the world. I go to church, and I don't know about you, and I see all elderly people and one or two younger families and me and my family hanging around. And I say, where are all these other people? What are they doing? So do you think that lack of religion, like you said, is really what's causing this problem? Del, what do you see this?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, it goes back to, I can't remember the exact date, but it was the, I believe her name was Madeline Murray O'Hare or something along those lines, who, you know, pursued the, she was an avowed atheist and was a driving force behind having the, all of the effort nowadays to take religion out of the public sphere. You know, she her groups that have been spawned by her try to stop nativity scenes on public lands, and you know, these large Christian crosses that have been a fixture for decades that just happen to be on public land that different groups are trying to take down. So, I mean, it's a concerted effort on, and I think it's not just a anti-religious effort from the standpoint of atheism, but it's a political effort. I think that religion gives a foundation to the people of this country. It gives us something to hold on to. Obama said it well. He said, you know, we're clinging to our religion and guns. Well, he's absolutely right. You know, religion has always been and always should be, and hopefully will be, a very important part of this country. And God help us if it ceases to be.
And I see that continuing trend downward and the rise in crime. Now, we can see some of these places. New York City, a place near and dear to my heart. New York City, I was there in the early 80s when it was extremely dangerous to go to New York City. We had unbelievable numbers of murders, unbelievable numbers of crime. You took your life in your hands going to the city. And then I saw Giuliani come in, and he had a very strong personality. He decided to fight crime. And there was a feeling, even amongst the people who are much more liberal in New York City, that it was unlivable. Now, they didn't like Giuliani. They spoke up against him. But at the same time, they voted for him. And he came in and cleaned up the city and made it into a place where you had Disneyland in Times Square, where before you had prostitution and all kinds of peep shows and everything else. And he turned it into a nice place, which I think is indicative of adding law and order, which is morality. Everyone follow the rules, do the right thing, respect each other. And it turned it into a beautiful place. In the last couple of years, we've had a completely different way of thinking. And we see New York City starting to fall back into its old problems. There are more attacks on people. There are more sexual assaults. There's more crime in the streets. We look at any of our big cities that are run by our friends on the left, and because you can certainly make a demarcation of who's running the city and what's going on. We look at some of these places, like San Francisco, where people are allowed to live in their own filth on the streets. How is that a moral thing to do? To say, well, they have a right to live in the street and defecate in the street and live in it and use drugs, and we're going to give them needles because we're empowering people to live their lives. How is that possibly a moral way to lead a city like that? Ava, am I wrong here?
It's totally immoral. And why are people doing this? This is my always been my question. I'm one of those very irritating people that will say, why is this happening? Why do we tell children about God? What is the purpose of that? Because a small child, let's say 3 or 4 years old, they start asking you, Mom, why do I have to be nice? Why do I, you know, why am I being punished for stealing? Why am I, you know, and you sit down with the child, and that's the introduction to God. That's the introduction to the omnipotent power who watches you all day and all night and knows everything. So that right there, you have to have the beginning of a conscience in order to weigh right and wrong in your mind. That begins in early childhood, that teaching of God. I mean, my mom was the first person, she was my first religious leader, okay? She was Catholic, she was Italian, and you can just imagine what that was like. But I understood it all, and I wanted to be good. She made me want to be good. That came from my mom. My dad wasn't quite as good. He drank and sometimes got in trouble, but but she even reeled him in. And I just love that kind of a personality that can say, God is good. God is here for you to, in times of trouble, to sit down and decide what is right and what is wrong. And that needs to be taught, and we're not teaching it.
Right. I think the answer, as basic and as simple as it can be, in my opinion, my humble opinion, is the power of prayer. Because that's probably one of the strongest, most unsung things in the world of humanity. Because as much as people want to tell us there is no God, it's a myth, we're here on our own, I personally do not believe that. And I think that the power of prayer is our greatest hope. And if we turn to that and we ask our loving God to please step in here and straighten us out so that we can be a more loving people, a better place for everybody, the world will be better off. So I want to thank my guests, Del Wilbur and Ava Armstrong, for this great conversation. This is something that we all have to have, this conversation around your kitchen table tonight with your family, with your friends. You know, bring that up. That's kind of weird around a cocktail party. Bring it up and ask everybody, what do you think about the moral underpinnings of the country? And see where your friends go. Sometimes people are just waiting for some leadership. Maybe you can be that leader. So I want to thank everybody for being with us this week on The Viewpoint This Sunday. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. It's been my pleasure to be here. And remember, it's time to get involved, and it's time to get loud.